Welcome to the Creative Differences Podcast. I'm Gabby, and I bet you're super confused right now.
And I'm Demi, and guys, I love movies so much. Like, just movies, just in general. Movies are great. Welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other pop culture-related items. Today, we are reviewing the movie of the year, The Odyssey.
Woo-woo. And it's just us two.
Yeah, it's just us two. It's a first-timer for us. Cassie got trapped on her own little Odyssey, and Dallas is trapped on Calypso's Island, so who knows when he'll be back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, before we get started, make sure you guys like, share, subscribe, do all this stuff, hit the bells, hit the buttons, hit the hype button. I hear there's a hype button. I don't know what it does. Well, actually, I do know what it does. Hit the hype button, please. And spread this around, because we've been doing this for 5 years.
Hello.
As of our last podcast, I think, as of July 4th.
That's crazy.
We've been doing this for 5 years, and we still really don't have an audience. So...
Damn.
We do this.
Why?
Just like Christopher Nolan, kidding. We do this for the love of the game.
Yeah, at this point. Yeah.
Been doing it for the love of the game. All right, guys. Yeah. So let's jump into this, because while this movie is hella long, we don't want this review to be hella long.
Nope.
All right, guys.
No, we do not.
So The Odyssey, directed and written by Christopher Nolan, based on the epic poem by Homer. It stars Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, Robert Pattinson, Lupita Nyong'o, Samantha Morton, Zendaya, John Leguizamo, John Bernthal, Himesh Patel, Corey Hawkins, Elliot Page, and Charlize Theron, and a bunch of other people, to be honest. All of Hollywood, I guess. I don't know.
Yep. It's a Christopher Nolan movie. So at this point, you know, they're like, here, unlimited money, hire whoever you want.
Everybody and their mama in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and the IMDb summary is, after the Trojan War, Odysseus faces a dangerous voyage back to Ithaca, meeting creatures like the Cyclops, Polyphemus, Sirens, and Calypso along the way. Sure, yeah, that's a pretty basic summary.
Yeah, it's like thousands of years old story. So
it's so old, guys. It's so old that we're not even sure that Homer actually wrote it. We're actually pretty sure that it was passed down through oral tradition, and somebody who we named Homer happened to write it down.
Yep.
That's how old this story is. I love this movie. I love it so much. It is easily the best movie of the year so far. I don't know if any other movie is actually going to top this. I don't know. The sheer magnitude of what Christopher Nolan achieved with this film is staggering. Like, I love watching movies like this, because it makes me go, oh yeah, this is why I want to make movies. Like, this is why I got into filmmaking. This is why I went to film school, because I wanted to learn how to do all this. And to be honest, this review is not going to be long enough to really break down everything that was done super well in this movie, or to even fully analyze it, which I desperately want to do, because, man, this movie reminded me so much of how much I love the psychology behind the choices that you make when making movies. And I feel like Christopher Nolan made so many great choices when adapting this story. Where to begin? There were several points in this movie where I got chills just watching it. Just, I was like, this is amazing. What am I witnessing? This is an experience. Ooh. I acknowledge the fact that I am highly privileged, because I can go see this in the 70mm IMAX format that Christopher Nolan shot it in.
Yeah, I was going to ask, which format did you see it in?
I saw it the way Christopher Nolan intended it to be seen.
He was like, the way it was intended. Got it. Okay, amazing.
The way he intended. And it was beautiful. It was spectacular. Ooh. I acknowledge that I'm privileged enough to do that. I am going to highly recommend, if you are interested in seeing this movie, please see it on whatever screen you can go see it on. The bigger, the better, because it's just a beautifully made movie regardless. And I really hope that when it comes to the home release, that they end up releasing the IMAX format aspect ratio.
Maybe in the Blu-ray.
I hope so, because I feel like everybody should get to experience what was shot. Even if you can't experience it on like the biggest IMAX screen possible, I feel like you should be able to at least watch it the way that Christopher Nolan wanted it to be shot.
Okay.
It feels like Christopher Nolan's entire career has led to this moment. I've seen a lot of people pointing out how much The Odyssey has so many themes that Christopher Nolan tackles in a lot of his other films. And it's kind of like watching Guillermo del Toro finally make Frankenstein. It's like, Christopher Nolan unknowingly has been building his career to making The Odyssey, which is really weird because I remember when it was announced, I was so interested in what Christopher Nolan would bring to the story because he's not a fantasy guy. He's very...
Yeah, no.
Very realism.
Yeah, he did comics really well.
But he took all the cartoony, comic-y-ness out of it and made it very realistic comic book. So I was like, well, what do you do when you have a Cyclops in the movie? Like, when you have sea monsters, when you have gods. And to be fair, he doesn't have many gods in the movie. But to be fair, I just finished reading The Odyssey translated by Emily Wilson. And the gods aren't a big physical presence in the book except for Athena and Aeolus. And Athena plays a role in this movie, as she should. Everybody should be nominated for an Oscar.
I got it.
I think that this deserves the casting Oscar that we just started up this past year.
Bro.
I think all of our leads and supporting actors need nominations. You can't give them all a nomination, obviously, but Matt Damon, give him one. Anne Hathaway. If Anne Hathaway's nomination clip is not her yelling, "I want Odysseus," I'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
That line delivery is going to haunt me for a while. I'm obsessed. Tom Holland, give him a supporting role nomination. Just give everybody their flowers. Everybody did such a fantastic job. The cinematography is absolutely beautiful and it's grand. And that's why I wish everybody could see it in the 70 millimeter IMAX because it's so beautiful. And like shooting it on such a big scope because this is a giant epic myth. Like it should be as big as possible to make these figures larger than life. Yeah, and I think that Christopher Nolan pushing IMAX to innovate their technology so that he could make this movie was a very good choice.
That's cool. Going back to what you were saying about you feel like Christopher Nolan's like whole career has been leading up to this, I would say also his use of IMAX has been leading up to this too. Like he's been using IMAX cameras since The Dark Knight. There's videos of, or like pictures of him on the set of The Dark Knight with that big old IMAX camera. So the fact that he was able to, did he shoot the entire thing in
the entire IMAX? Thing is in IMAX, which is a never before seen done with narrative feature filmmaking. It's done for like nature docs, I think, before, but it's only because IMAX cameras are so loud, and also you can only shoot 3 minutes at a time. So
because of how like limited the reel
is.
The butt though.
And it's a huge camera, and then like Christopher Nolan had them create this thing called the blimp, which causes the sound to be like just in that in the blimp. It stays like focused in there so that like it's not disturbing like on-set sound, so you can finally do dialogue scenes while doing shooting in IMAX, which is why whenever you watch IMAX movies you never see dialogue scenes in the IMAX aspect ratio. So like Christopher Nolan has really, really pushed for IMAX to innovate. Our friend Jesse has a joke that like somebody is just stressed out whenever Christopher Nolan walks into the IMAX building because they know that they're gonna have to build something new. They're gonna have to create something or other.
Or no, if I know anybody, somebody that works in like blue collar work with like engineers and people that like their minds are always going, somebody rubs their hands together and is like, yes, I'll finally get the budget to do the thing I've been wanting to do for
years.
Oh,
you want it to be quieter and faster? I got you.
Oh, I've been trying to convince my boss to let me do this for years, and he's like, we don't have the money.
There are film nerds everywhere who are like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, no. And one of those works at IMAX and worked on that project, at least, or if not, a whole army of them.
For sure. Yeah, I was saying the cinematography looks great. Hoyt Van Hoytema, I believe, is the name of the cinematographer. I hope I pronounced their name correctly. Phenomenal job doing the cinematography. It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Ludwig Göransson, my boy, constantly giving us
the third Oscar.
Listen, this is the second movie of the year, and both of these scores have been fire, bro.
Yeah. Or fourth Oscar?
I don't remember, but that man out here killing it. The music doesn't feel like just music in the background. It feels like it is an integral part of the soundscape.
Yeah.
The world that you are living in, music happens to be playing while these people are living their lives. Like, that's what that feels like. It is the heartbeat of the movie. Yeah. There were points where I could feel my heart racing to the same beat as the drum on screen.
Yes.
It was
That's what you want
crazy.
From a fantasy epic. That's what you want from the Greek epic.
Oh,
well,
God.
One of the Greek epics, right? It's like this one and the Iliad.
The score goes crazy. And I need to go back and rewatch it again because I want to experience that score again. Because like, it's funny because I can't even like tell you what any of the motifs sound like. I just feel like it's so embedded in the film that it's just like it's part of the sound design. It is part of the sound effects and everything. There's a bowstring draw that happens musically, and it's just every time it happens, it's beautiful. Oh my gosh, Ludwig went crazy on this one.
Awesome. Dude, Oscar's best score category this year is gonna
be insane.
Crazy.
This movie went crazy, and I really enjoyed, when it comes to doing adaptations, especially of something so long, there are always going to be cuts and changes that are made to the story. I think that Christopher Nolan made some really good choices with his cuts, and also with the things that he adds to the story, as well as things that get merged together to make things more concise.
Okay.
I think he made really good choices with that. I didn't feel like anything was lost. I felt like the integrity of the story still remains intact. And I think also there's this interesting thing that he does add to the story. Like the whole story of the Odyssey, thematically, there is a large story about hospitality and the way that we treat people and compassion and empathy. Yeah. And that you treat any person you meet the same. You treat them well. Because, as they say in the movie, you don't know if it's a god in disguise. But, like, yep. It's the classic golden rule of treat people the way you would want to be treated. That's always been the story of the Odyssey. And I think that Nolan explores that even deeper by really weaving it throughout, like, even the Trojan War. Like, it's already in Penelope Suitors, but also within how Odysseus treats the people that are surrounding him as he's trying to make his way home. There's this idea of how our humanity resides in our compassion and our empathy for others, and how when we let go of the golden rule, we give permission for others to do the same, to let go of that rule, and it plunges our world into a much darker place. It makes us a worse place, and it causes such toxic behavior if we don't continue to treat each other the way that we want to be treated.
Okay.
I think Nolan really, really grinds that home in this film. For something that is such like an epic scale of a movie, it still feels very human. It still feels very personal. And man, I don't know how he did it. There's some horror elements in this movie. There's some body horror I was not anticipating.
Ooh.
And
oh,
it goes
no.
crazy. I was talking about this movie with a friend, and she kept listing off different sequences in the movie. And I wasn't able to respond back like within each time that she would like send a different sequence. And I was like, yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was great. Everything, just every part of this movie. Ah, God, it's so good. I know people were complaining about the non-period accurate costumes, but let me just tell y'all, when Agamemnon stepped in a room...
We don't even know when this story took place.
That's fair. But like, when Agamemnon steps in the room, though, the aura, mm-hmm. I was like, bro, this is the coolest thing ever. Sometimes you just gotta follow the rule of cool. Sometimes the rule of cool is mandatory when you're making a film. But yeah, the movie's great. It's amazing. I know some people are having an issue with like the modern American English dialogue, which I don't have an issue with. Using an English accent in archaic English is just as far off from ancient Greek as any other modern language, so I don't really think it takes away.
Yeah, that's the exact point Emily Wilson makes in her book. I mean, she uses the word dad in her translation. I'm reading the Iliad, right? So yeah. I'm experiencing her translation style right now.
I just finished both of them, the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Exactly. She's like, these books are so old, we don't know how old they are. And it doesn't change the fact that it doesn't even sound like this, guys. And nobody that's alive speaks this language anymore, really. There's people that understand it, but nobody's having dialogues in this language. So, like, who cares which accents we use? Like, using an English accent isn't going to make it any more or less old.
Also, one of the things I really enjoyed was at times the dialogue feels very poetic, and also the editing itself. Shout out to the editor. I think her name is Jennifer Lame. Amazing
Hell
work
yeah.
with the editing. It feels rhythmic and it feels poetic in a way. But I was going to say, I loved that. They did a really good job with the editing, especially because apparently IMAX reels have to be under 3 hours. So to edit that
Why?
Down to, I don't know. That's the thing that I just discovered okay. today. But like, if you're doing
okay.
like a 70 millimeter IMAX Google. Reel, it has to be under 3 hours. And she edited this movie down to 2 hours and 52 minutes, So shout out to her. It's also very beautifully edited as well. But what I was going to say is that, speaking of Emily Wilson, translating it, we have a history of different writers and academics and historians who have translated these epics and these ancient Greek texts and all sorts of ancient cultural texts throughout history. And every interpretation is going to be different. Everybody's going to bring their own thing to their interpretation. Everybody's got a different goal in mind when they are making their interpretation. And I think that Nolan himself has created his own interpretation of the Odyssey. And I like to view it in that regard and in that respect as like, yeah, this goes alongside, like, depending on what you're looking for in your interpretation of the Odyssey, maybe you want Emily Wilson's more direct translation, or maybe you want something that's a little bit more flowery and more poetic, like I think Fagin's translation is more like that. So like, this is Nolan's own translation of the Odyssey, but done in a cinematic fashion, and I think that's really cool, and I think he did a really good job with that. On a technical scale, it's very grand and it's amazing, but also just like, you feel this movie, and sometimes that's like, sometimes that's really like the guiding factor. Like, when you can feel a movie like deep within you, like emotionally, and not like the characters are causing the emotion, but just like the experience of the movie causes that emotion, man, you've really created something really, really special. Man, I really love filmmaking. I love cinema. I love this art form and like what we do. Like, it's sometimes it's really hard for me to talk to like average moviegoers about movies, because I want to dive into like, hey, so like, let's get into that psychology of why this movie works so well for you, why this shot works for you, and why this music works the way it does, and why we do this and why we do that. And like, you know, only film nerds are interested in that. And this is one of those movies that makes me want to like really dive into those conversations. It makes me want to open like one of my old cinema textbooks. Man, it felt good. It is a movie that will be studied, should be studied for going forward. Yeah. So there are probably better, more articulate reviews out there, but I came out of this movie like speechless, consider my breath taken away. And the last time I felt that way, the last time I felt so awestruck and gobsmacked by a movie was when I came out of Dune Part 1.
Oh, bro. I remember when you came out of that.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
I know you really, really like something, or something makes a huge impact when you start your hyperfixation on it. And you went on like a Dune rabbit hole. And I was like, almost with you. I was very close to also going down a Dune rabbit hole. Like, my man bought me the box set, and yeah. It was also like epic. I got my dad to read it.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah, no, I'm still on the Dune rabbit hole, as a matter of fact.
Cause Dune 3 about to come out.
Yeah, I gotta buy Dune Messiah.
Also, what a freaking year for Zendaya.
Yo, going three, crazy.
Three epic blockbusters. Because Spider-Man, you know, about to break records too.
Yeah, three epic blockbusters.
And the Odyssey.
One great indie film and Euphoria.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Euphoria.
Yeah.
Five
projects this year. She's going crazy, because our next review will most likely be for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I probably will not be in that one because I will be on a cruise, but you know, wait up for that one. But yeah, The Odyssey. Oh my gosh. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. And I don't know if any movie will be able to stand up next to this one for the rest of this year. This was absolutely like the movie of the year that everybody was waiting to see. The culture war has been freaking stupid, but the movie's fantastic, and I am hoping to be able to go see it again in the 70mm IMAX hopefully this week. Put up another 30. That is my review of The Odyssey.
Woo!
Great. Oh my gosh. This is Christopher Nolan's best work. This is my favorite Christopher Nolan.
It's his magnum opus.
It might be.
It's his newest magnum opus. I feel like he's testing out different genres. Like, he's like, I've never made a fantasy epic, so let me make a fantasy epic. I'd never make a comic book movie. I'd never make a biopic. Let me make a biopic. Like, I think he's jumping through. I can't wait till he makes a romantic comedy, is basically what I'm saying.
I think The Dark Knight was the one that everybody would consider his magnum opus until this one. I think this is it. Dark Knight still above Oppenheimer with the audience score too, 94 to 91.
I mean, it's hard to be Batman.
The Dark Knight's critic score is 94 and Oppenheimer is 93. So they're not far apart.
If we're going Chris Nolan's like technical advancements, obviously Oppenheimer is above that. Like they filmed an atom bomb that they built themselves.
They also created black and white film for IMAX, which had never been done before. Christopher Nolan really just be like, yo, yeah. I need y'all to do this.
He just walks in and he's like, and but the thing is, again, you know, there's some nerd in the back that's like, finally. He's like, yes, I've been telling them for years.
I really want Christopher Nolan to be the cause of a resurgence of IMAX theaters. Like, so bad. The fact that there's only 41 worldwide is insane to me.
Wow.
And there's only one in the Southern Hemisphere, I think.
That's crazy. That's not fair.
It's in Australia.
Is it in Australia?
Yeah, it's in Melbourne.
Melbourne. Ugh. Imagine like you want to see this in 70 millimeter and you have to drive across your own country
so
to be able to witness
it. So many people can't. And I actually have seen people saying that they're driving like 4 hours to go to the nearest IMAX theater.
I bet you somebody like flew to the United States and was like, fuck it, it's the World Cup and Christopher Nolan, I will be there, America.
Insane.
Just for the convenience.
There's 41 worldwide, and I think, first off, there were only 30 when Oppenheimer came out. They renovated.
So they did blow up.
They renovated projectors to get us to 41 for the Odyssey and trained 60 new technicians.
Do you know how to operate IMAX?
I know how to operate a 35 millimeter projector, and I'm sure a 70 millimeter is maybe similar, but probably different. But I feel like I could learn how to do it. But there's 41 worldwide. 24 of those are in America.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
At least in LA, the resurgence of the, and like a lot of famous people, rich famous people, are starting to just buy up the theaters that are closing down and just running them for funsies. Yeah.
But we need it to be really more than just LA and New York. We need it to expand like worldwide.
True. Or at least to like middle of the country.
It's a very privileged take, but as somebody whose entire life is movies, I would like a world where more people can just go to the movies.
Like, also, if they're closing in Los Angeles, do you know what I mean?
My friend just had like her, my friend doesn't live in LA, but they just had their theater close in their very small town. They now have to go an hour out of their city to just go to a regular movie. And I think that's insane.
Crazy. But it's just another one of those things that streaming's ruined.
Yeah. First world problems.
No, movies are important. Movies are important.
No, though.
No. I think movies are very important. They allow people to dream. They allow people to move. They allow people to see a life outside of their own. I think that they're very important for empathy.
Yes.
And I think they're very important to see them in a room full of people, strangers, that so that you can learn that you can relate to strangers. Faceless strangers, because that's what movie theaters are. It's faceless strangers enjoying the same thing together or having a collective experience.
There's a reason why movies have always been used for propaganda. They are strong communicators. Anyway, what have you been watching? Have you been reading something? I mean, you said you're reading the Iliad and the Odyssey right now.
I am reading the Iliad. That was going to originally be my what you watching. Actually, another thing that I saw recently that was absolutely the silliest thing I've seen in a while is on HBO Max. It's Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness and Almost History of America. Spoilies, or you could skip ahead really fast. But Obama does the intro. Fun. And I'm like, how'd they get Obama?
Obama's just doing side quests now.
Yeah, he's like side quests, but I think they did it at his presidential library because he like walks in, he's walking through this like museum type building, and he's like doing an intro like you would do an intro to like a documentary, and it's just this dumb Larry David comedy thing where he's like in historical garb. It is the silliest thing I've seen in a while. I've only seen the first two episodes, but if you want something absolutely ridiculous by Larry David, I highly recommend Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness and Almost a History of America. And also, if you've ever wanted to read the Odyssey or the Iliad and you're like, girl, I'm not a classics major, girly pop, I don't think I could understand it, I do highly recommend the Emily Wilson translations. They are extremely easy to understand. If you can read a book and understand it, you can understand this version of the Odyssey and the Iliad. She does a really great job. And the beginning, she adds a lot of background information so she contextualizes the work. And then she gives you translator's notes so that you know that all of her decisions that she made were intentional. She didn't just copy it down and translate it like word for word. She made informed choices. She was trying to have a rhythm to this. Obviously, English can't do the same rhythm as the Greek.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's Homeric Greek. There's a video out there, though, of somebody like saying the translation in the Homeric Greek, and it has a rhythm to it. It's a very different rhythm from iambic pentameter, which is what she uses for these translations.
And it's beautiful.
But it is it's beautiful. And it's, again, intentional. She didn't just decide randomly that this is what she was going to do. She explains all her choices, and it's accessible is what I like about this. I was like, I don't have to have a classics major. I don't have to go and, you know, sit down and look a bunch of stuff up and try to figure out what this means. There's like a glossary, there's a pronunciation guide, all that stuff in the back of these translations, but you don't need them really. You can just vibe out on the book, on the poem. You can vibe out on this and finish it. I am not a fast reader. I'm a slow reader. I only read between 40 and 50 pages an hour, and or average, I guess.
It's about a chapter and a half in the Iliad and about 2 chapters in the Odyssey.
Yeah. But the thing is, I was going to say, so normally with like an older style book that with a dialect that I'm not entirely familiar with, for example, like Jane Austen, I go down to like 20 to 30 pages an hour. But with Emily Wilson's translation of the Iliad, my reading rate stayed the same, which is all you really need to know. It's like, yeah, the rate at which I read books did not change.
It's very good. I read both of them, luckily in time for the Odyssey to come out. I literally finished the Odyssey.
I told you could finish them.
I finished it the day before I went to go see the movie.
You were like, I don't think I'm going to finish it. And I was like, because did I tell you when you started? Had you not started yet or something?
I think I was getting ready to start. I think I was finishing the Iliad. And I was like, okay. That's okay. I have like,
I was like, no, you can do it.
2 or 3 weeks to finish the Odyssey. And I did 2 chapters a day. And luckily, literally 2 chapters a day on the weekdays was perfect timing for me to be done right before my showing of the movie.
Yeah.
I enjoyed reading both of them. I now want somebody to adapt the Iliad. I saw Troy. I watched it before I went to go see the Odyssey. Troy has no gods in it, and I need somebody to adapt the Iliad with the gods in it because their drama is so messy and I'm obsessed.
Oh yeah.
I need it.
I was gonna say, like, the Iliad is so gods heavy. They're in like every other chapter and they're all bitching and they're all moaning and they're all going to Zeus, and Zeus is like, if y'all don't leave me alone.
And they're all manipulating
at least
the
part
war
that I'm at right now.
Like, God, I love it so much.
When it gets down to it, it's just like, well, I don't care what happens. I'm just like bored. And these humans are just fun. Yeah.
Yes. Dude. Like, the humans are just toys for them, but they love certain ones. It's so good.
Yeah. They're like, I like him and I like the city. No. The coldest thing ever was like Hera telling Zeus, if you let me destroy Troy, there's these 3 cities. I love them so much. These are my favorite cities in the whole wide world, but like, you can destroy them. I don't care about them as long as you let me destroy Troy. And I was like, cold-blooded.
I was just talking yesterday about Hera sleeping with Zeus in that poem just to distract him and manipulate him from what's going on in the war. Crazy work.
If you're gonna distract Zeus, that's how you do it. Like, let's be honest. What annoyed me is when Thetis went to Zeus crying. She was like, Zeus, they're being mean to my baby. Well, no, first Achilles went to Thetis and was like, Mom. And then Thetis was like, don't worry, baby, I'll take care of it. And she goes to Zeus.
It's so anyway, good. I love all
see
the
how accessible
drama.
This is. We can talk about it casually like this because this is how accessible that version is. Please, if you've ever been like, I want to know, but I don't know, these are definitely the versions to do it with. And I like that her approach was accessibility. I also like Emily Wilson's like the first woman that's published to have translated these 2 versions.
Only in English.
Like, ever.
Only in English.
Yeah, in English. Sorry. Yes, you're correct.
I think the first woman to ever translate Homer's work, if not, it might have just been the Odyssey, but was in the 1700s into French.
Damn, we're 400 years too late. I don't know. Whatever. 1700s.
I don't know. But yeah.
We're in the 21st century.
Very good books. Highly recommend them. Very good poems. I keep saying books, but they're in books for us. So very good books.
They're in book form, but it is an epic
poem. Yeah, it's
poem.
A poem.
Also, epic poems don't rhyme, guys. Just FYI. So
yeah,
it's not going to be like,
there's no rhyming.
Rhymey.
I had to remind myself that it's rhythm. An iambic pentameter, and I have such a hard time reading anything in that pentameter. Also, highly recommend the audiobooks because I also read it while listening to the audiobooks. So Audra McDonald does the Iliad. Audra McDonald, it's incredible. Fantastic. And then Claire Danes does the Odyssey.
Nice.
So those are both very entertaining listens.
And beautiful women with beautiful voices.
Yes. So what you've been watching, what you've been reading, for me, the day before I went to go see the Odyssey, I went to go see the live action Moana.
Oh.
My opinion on that is, however you feel about these live action Disney movies, whatever your opinion is on the fact that this movie exists, is probably going to be your opinion of the movie when you come out of it.
Okay.
But shout out to Frankie Adams. I was so happy to see her on screen. I love her on The Expanse. So seeing her in a big blockbuster movie was like absolutely it for me. Love Frankie Adams.
Wait, Frankie Adams? Wait, who is she playing?
She plays Moana's mom.
That's a great choice. Dude, I might need to because I love Bobby. Her character is Bobby, right?
I love Bobby. Bobby's my Billy? Girl.
Ugh. Okay. Yes. I might need love to her. See this.
And then Catherine Lagaia, I thought she did I think that's how you pronounce her last name. I hope I just pronounced it correctly. I thought she did a good job playing Moana. And then I also saw The Invite, which is Olivia Wilde, Seth Rogen, Penelope Cruz, and Ed Norton.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yes, very good movie. So funny, awkward comedy, very messy relationship drama, and I loved it. Rashida Jones was one of the co-writers on the script. It's a very sharp script, very clever. Ooh. Loved it. It was such a good movie. It's so far one of my favorite movies of the year. Had such a great time watching it. Kind of in the same vein as the drama, except maybe not as... The drama's dealing with a lot more heavy issues. That one has like... Yeah. What's the other shoe that's going to drop? Whereas The Invite doesn't have another shoe to drop. If you've seen the trailer, that is the big thing of the movie. And there are a couple of little smaller things that are in there. But it's really well done. Very dialogue heavy movie. Very, very good. Very much enjoyed it. And then I was also going to talk about the fact that I read The Iliad and The Odyssey. But me and Gabby already discussed that. So,
woo!
Look at that.
You did. I'm so glad that you got to finish it.
I'm so glad I finished it, too.
Yeah, I'm still slugging through The Iliad. But I think if I focus, I'll be able to finish The Iliad and The Odyssey by Saturday.
Yeah. As somebody who's a big Greek myth lover, like, I really wanted to read some, like, actual epics. So I'm
me too.
I'm really glad that I got to do that.
Yeah.
Is there anything, like any trailers or any news that's come out that has you looking forward to something that's coming up in the future? The horizon. Look to the horizon. What's coming up in pop culture?
Other than being excited about Spider-Man and Dune, not much.
I'm so excited about Dune. Dune is the only thing that has like the chance of knocking The Odyssey off as my favorite movie of the year. And that's only because I have like very previous bias towards Dune because I love Dune so bad.
Oh, Dune is so good. I can't wait. Legitimately very excited about Dune. And really excited about Spider-Man. I might take my gremlin to see Spider-Man because they do like Spider-Man. They were going around saying that they were Spider-Man. And I was like, yes, you are. This is a
love this.
It's a rite of passage. So we might go see it.
I'm super excited about Dune. And one of the cool things about going to see The Odyssey in the 40mm IMAX is that there is an exclusive preview for Dune Part 3. Before the movie starts, it's the first sequence of the movie, the first 4 minutes of the film, and it is stunning. I'm so excited.
Wait,
I love
the
way
the first four minutes.
This was when I knew I had a great audience. Before the footage starts, there's a note from Denis Villeneuve that basically says, "To my friend Christopher Nolan, thank you for this. Now enjoy your preview of Dune Part 3." I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically like the sentiment. And oh my gosh, like, and the audience just started cheering. And I was like, yes, this is the right audience for me because I'm also so excited Dune. It looks cool. It's like a war sequence. It's a battle sequence. And it just looks so good. Ooh. The scale of it looks amazing. Another reason why you should go see it in 70mm IMAX, if you have the capability of doing so, I say again, it's stunning. And we have a new cinematographer for Dune Part 3. And it looks like he's doing a great job. He also did this year's Wuthering Heights, which I thought the cinematography on that movie was gorgeous. So Dune Part 3 looks incredible. That first sequence looks immaculate. The scale is crazy. I was so in awe of like the way that they shot this battle sequence, the weaponry that's being used, everything. And I'm very excited to see the upcoming movie. And getting to see that scene only made me more excited about like what's to come in December. But that's so far away. But I gotta make it to December 18th.
Yeah.
So I can
watch. It feels long now, but
it feels so long right now.
Actually, I will say, sorry, let me go back to, I do actually have something else I'm looking forward to. I just remembered. We were finally given a release date for The Love Hypothesis because, you know, I am a romance girly. I'm a romance book girly and I'm really looking forward to, and they gave us, I think they gave us as close to September 29th as they could. Love Hypothesis, I believe, comes out September 23rd. If you are an Allie Hazelwood book fan, you know that September 29th is one of the significant dates for the characters on the book. But September 23rd is on a Wednesday. So, you know, that's also a significant day for the characters in the book. So I'm really also looking forward to Love Hypothesis. We just got a teaser trailer for The Love Hypothesis. And so we finally got to, you know, see Adam the way Adam is and Olive the way she is. It's very cute. Really looking forward to Lily Reinhart. She made excellent choices as a producer for this movie. So I'm excited. I'm so excited. You can tell she is familiar with the book and with the fandom of the book.
So you talking about your favorite romance novel just made me remember that we got the announcement that Rebecca Yarros is releasing Threshing Day on September 29th.
Hell yeah.
Just a series of like short stories about different threshing days for different characters in the story and or in the book series. And one of those stories is obviously going to be the story of Zayden and Sigail and their threshing.
I want to know about Mira. I hope
Mira's is in there. Oh my gosh.
Dude,
I haven't even considered
Rhiannon.
I absolutely need Rhiannon's because Rhiannon is potentially my favorite character in all of Fourth Wing. Yeah. I love her to bits.
And Riddick. What kind of jokes were Riddick and the dragon telling
and
each
A-Trom?
Other? You know what I mean?
Because
you know, isn't his name Joke or something? The dragon's name translates to joke or laugh or something.
I have no idea. I'm so excited to have another book. Even though it's not book four, I love this universe so much. It's the universe that got me back into reading. So I'm reading as an adult at the very least. So I'm very excited to return to that world, hang out, do some threshing stuff. It'll be fun. It's going to be like intense, probably kind of violent. And I'm very excited.
But also fun.
Yeah. And also like the TV show got like a series pickup or something like that from Amazon.
Yeah.
And I'm really hopeful.
We keep getting news from the show, too. So I think it's going to be great. The guys at work are like, I've told the guys the story of Fourth Wing.
Because it's so cool.
Sans the romance. Because it's so good. And they're like, let me know when that show's coming out. Like, I'll watch it.
I'm so excited. Yeah. Shout out to Andy Navaretti from Obsession, who kind of brought that show back into my consciousness because she was talking about how she wants to play Violet. I have only ever seen her in Superman and Lois, and I thought she was a good actress on that. So I'm with it. I found out she's 5 foot tall, and I immediately was like, yep, give her the role. That's it. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she would make a, she like looks like the Violet the way she's described. Yeah.
If they cast a black man to play Zayden, I will be over the moon.
That would be perfect.
Because that's always how I've imagined him since I read his description. I hope Rebecca Yarros, I hope she stands 10 toes down on how she wrote Zayden. Listen, just having like a man of color as like the leading man in a romantic mm-hmm. fantasy novel, like bless her. Because... Mm-hmm. Needed it desperately in my life. I didn't know I needed it until I read it. And I was like, oh, this is my book boyfriend. This man right here. This problematic
Everybody
man right
needs
here.
Needs their own flavor of shadow power hottie.
Shadow daddy.
Uh-huh. I didn't want to say that, but yes.
As the fandom says.
Well, not just him. Any dude, because there's a lot of male characters cool shadow powers.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of shadow daddies. But this is just this book's shadow.
That one's mine. But mm-hmm. on that note, thank you guys for joining us for this review. It's been a fun, epic fantasy journey.
See you.
Thank you, Brendan and Io, for putting us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I choose not to thank myself because I think that's very, very, very weird. Thank you, Gabby, for joining me.
Yeah, I got you.
This is our first time ever, just us two on the podcast.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
New combo unlocked.
A new combo unlocked. All right, guys, you guys can comment down below. Tell us your thoughts on The Odyssey or anything else that we've discussed. I mean, we talked about a lot. The Odyssey, The Iliad, Life, Larry, and The Pursuit of Unhappiness, Fourth Wing, Dune Part 3. So much. So many things were discussed. Talk to us in the comments down below. Or you guys can hit us up on Facebook at Creative Differences PC, on TikTok at Creative Differences Pod, or you can hit us up on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast. Gabby, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Stegosauria.
And you guys can find me on Letterboxd or on Serialized, where I tend to occasionally do movie reviews and TV reviews. You guys can read my slightly more in-depth review of The Odyssey over there on Letterboxd. You guys can find me at Demi Joua. Joua is spelled J-O-I-E. Thank you guys again for joining us. If you guys would like, you guys can find Dallas at Calypso's Concubine.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. And if you guys would like to find Cassie, you can find her at Nobody Was Here.
Wow.
Thanks again for joining us. Tune in next time. I don't know what we'll be discussing. It might be Spider-Man. I probably won't be there for that. But hey, who knows? Stay tuned to find out. It's been different.
Bye.
I always forget that we have like a tag, but I do have a question for you. Who is your favorite Greek mythological character or figure?
I feel like that's obvious for you because I literally have a tattoo, but it's Cupid and Psyche.
Ooh.
And also Persephone and Hades. I like Persephone and Hades and Cupid and Psyche. I just don't have a good, like, pretty version of Persephone and Hades, but yeah, Cupid and Psyche.
Yeah, I don't think that exists yet, despite the fact that we have romanticized them.
Yep, but I got them. I got Cupid and Psyche tatted on my arm.
Nice. Honestly, funny enough, I think my favorite Greek mythological character is Calypso. And ooh. I always make the joke that I probably would be stuck on her island.
I'm like, she'd convince you to stay.
And you know what?
How she'd long be is glad he stuck on that island? Me. Is it like 2-3 years?
7 years.
Jesus. Okay, so of the 10 years he was on this epic journey, he was stuck on Calypso's island for 7 of the...
And honestly,
wow.
I don't blame him.